Now we turn our attention from written communication, which again would certainly be a part of a manager's responsibility, to oral communication. Again, we think of the words of the book, The Fast Forward MBA Pocket Reference, where the author, Dr. Paul A. Argenti, made this statement. Oral presentations in business are both prevalent and varied. Included in this area are speeches to large audiences, group presentations, speeches that involve meetings, brainstorming sessions, and so forth. Now, each of these activities, while different in form, each rely upon three basic components to be successful. And these three basic components, according to Dr. Argentini, are these. Number one, structure. Number two, visual aids. And number three, non-verbal delivery. Let's look first at structure. Presentation structure should also include four basic parts. The opening, or the grabber. The preview, or the agenda. The main points, or the body. And the conclusion, or the next steps. Part one, the grabber, first of all. A speaker needs to connect with the audience at the beginning of the presentation. Now, traditionally, this has led many to make the mistake of telling inappropriate jokes. Instead, a speaker should establish rapport by arousing the audience's interest in the topic. Often using statistics that present the topic in a new light can help grab the attention of those that are listening. For example, if you are making a presentation about an investment opportunity to a group of potential customers, you might begin by citing relevant numbers, something like this. While even the most optimistic investors count on a return of only 10% a year from their investments, our mutual fund has produced returns of over 25% for each of the last 3 years. Now, certainly, I think that would be, in that type of setting and for that type of presentation, that would be a grabber. And then we move from part one, the grabber, to part two, what we could identify as the agenda. Since an audience cannot skim your presentation in the same way one can skim a document, the speaker must provide an introduction, or if you will, a table of contents that will help guide the listener through the main points of the presentation. This preview should be explicit, and it's very wise if it's presented visually and orally so that you might have the greatest impact upon those that are listening. For example, to continue the presentation on the mutual fund previously described, the speaker might continue as follows. Today I would like to share with you how this fund has been able to achieve such success by first looking at our investment philosophy, by looking at how we determine which stocks to include in our portfolio, and by describing how we have been able to build the portfolio to its current size through investors like you. That illustrates part two, the agenda. So part one is the grabber, part two, the agenda, part three, the main points. As in writing, the body of a presentation should be organized coherently. It should be based upon some principles such as chronology, importance, or just the logic, the plain simple logic of the material that's being presented itself. Speakers often make the mistake of including too much information in an attempt to make sure that they have enough to say. In general, instructors in management communication courses suggest limiting the number of main points to 5 to 7. In addition to limiting the number of main points, speakers need to make sure to provide clear transitions between sections to connect these ideas for the listeners. Transitions can be as simple as enumeration, that is, citing the second reason, and as complex as repeating ideas in a couple of sentences for longer sections in a complicated presentation. So part one, as we think about the structure of this oral presentation, would be the grabber. Part two is the agenda. Part three, the main points, which you're going to limit so that you do not overload the presentation with more material and more information than an individual can absorb. And then part four, the conclusion. Speakers often fail to take advantage of one of the most critical parts of any presentation, and that is the ending. Most communication experts agree that audiences are most likely to pay close attention and remember what you say at the beginning of your presentation and at the end of your presentation. This means you have an obligation to provide closure for that communicative experience. Now, you can achieve such closure by referring to the grabber. For example, so if you're interested in taking part in this investment opportunity with greater than average returns, again, what are you doing? You're referring back to your introduction, back to your grabber. Or you could do this by referring to the next steps that need to be taken. Now that we have seen how this company is able to provide such staggering results, let's set up some meetings for you to meet with our investment advisors. Again, here's what we're going to do. Now that all this is true, we've presented it, and you understand, now here's what we're going to do. Or you could conclude by summarizing the main points or the main ideas. So let me repeat the ideas that we have covered today. Now when you put all of this together, as you're thinking about an oral presentation, and as a manager, as an administrator, there are going to be many, many times when you will have opportunity and responsibility to present some form of information. It may be at a staff meeting. It may be at, if you're involved in Christian work, at some denominational workshop or a denominational retreat. It may be at a seminar where you're called upon to speak. It may be at a training session in the organization where you have responsibility. But at some point, every manager and every administrator will have the responsibility of presenting oral information. So this information here, these principles and guidelines are certainly helpful. The grabber, the introduction. Someone has said that when you are approaching your subject in the time of the introduction, that you want to make sure that your introduction does just that. It introduces. In other words, let the introduction do what it's supposed to do and very naturally lead into what you're going to present in the main points. It should not promise more than you're able to, of course, present. And then maybe one other word about the conclusion, and that's just this. The conclusion should conclude. It's not a time where you're going to present new information or unexplored information, but it's a time where you bring to closure, where you have an opportunity to bring a point of conclusion to what you have been presenting. Now, in this whole area of communication and thinking about oral communication, one of the things that is certainly conducive and helpful in any oral communication, whether it's going to be a lecture in an academic classroom setting, if you're giving a leadership seminar at the business where you work, in any of these scenarios of communicative responsibility, visual aids are extremely important. Speakers have a variety of options available today to present ideas visually. In addition to traditional possibilities, such as overhead transparencies and 35mm slides, for instance, you now have access to technologically based visuals through computer projection. The medium you use should be based upon the audience needs and the level of formality that you're looking for in your presentation. Whatever medium you choose, the visuals themselves will fall into one of two categories. They're either going to be text visuals or they will be graphic visuals. Text visuals are used to show the structure of the presentation. Many speakers tend to use text visuals. For example, follow the bouncing ball. Many speakers tend to use text visuals like this for every idea they present, rather than for just the most important ideas. Now, in general, the best way to use text visuals is for the agenda, which tells the reader what the presentation is all about, and for major sections within a longer presentation. These text visuals should be well designed and easy to read. They should also include message titles that indicate the main idea of the visual to the viewer. Good design means lettering that is large enough for the situation and a letter style or font that is pleasing to the eye. So this is one approach, the text visual. Then there are graphic visuals. Graphic visuals include pictures, such as photographs, drawings, videos, as well as charts and graphs, including pie charts, bar charts, flow charts, and other diagrams. If you've been involved in past days, perhaps in following some political jargon, political presentation, one of the things you've noticed is that certain politicians in their presentation have been known to use various visuals and charts and graphs to illustrate visually the basic principles which they were trying to present. Visual communication expert Edward Tufte suggests that speakers should avoid graphics that are too complicated and include what he refers to as chart junk. He says chart junk is, for example, shading or 3D effects, legends, and hash marks. Researchers have shown repeatedly that simpler charts and graphs with message titles that act as topic sentences are best to use in almost all situations. Unfortunately, technology has made it easy for us to create overly complex visual aids. Something else, as we're thinking about the oral presentation, and we mentioned something about visual aids, but a part of this could also be identified as nonverbal delivery. While communication strategy, presentation strategy, visual aids, and content itself are all critical to the success of a presentation, what really makes many speakers awake at night in a cold sweat are the nonverbal components of the presentation. Most communication studies have shown that speaking in front of a group is one of the greatest fears that people have. Now, practice can help speakers lose their fear over time, so repeated rehearsals are the best antidote for anyone preparing a presentation. But now, speakers also need to be aware of the specific physical and vocal characteristics that determine successful nonverbal delivery. This would include such things as posture, body movement, eye contact, hand gestures, facial expressions, inflection, rate of speech, filler words, enunciation, and the list goes on. Most oral communication experts suggest that the best way to improve nonverbal delivery and avoid nervousness is to relax both the body and the mind. Exercising specific parts of the body and warming up the voice before a presentation help the speaker to gain confidence during the performance. Likewise, trying to build your self-confidence by avoiding self-criticism and looking at yourself in a practice session or videotape can do wonders for timid speakers. In addition to providing training and skills such as writing and oral presentation, management communication courses also cover the cultural context for managers who wish to succeed in an increasingly diverse and global economy. Managers can obviously become more sensitive to cultural differences by studying about or experiencing these different cultures firsthand. This, of course, is not always possible given the pressure of contemporary business life. Instead, managers should try to apply frameworks like those in the following examples, which we'll share, culled from a variety of disciplines that are used to teach business students how to succeed in diverse cultures. The world is the place, and in one way or another, every one of us in our organization, in our responsibility, at some point are going to be faced with a culture that is different from our own. And how we respond to that, how we react to that, goes a long way in whether we're going to be successful in the work we're trying to accomplish in that area. Anthropologists have established certain cultural value systems. These are frameworks that look at how attitudes differ about nature, time, social relations, activity, and humanity from culture to culture. For example, in the United States, we tend to believe that we can control and challenge nature, while in Middle Eastern cultures, such as Saudi Arabia, they tend to believe that life is determined by fate. Now, this can also have many implications for you in terms of success or failure of your communication objective if you're trying to communicate with someone in Saudi Arabia. Other cultures have beliefs about humanity that differ widely, from a feeling that people are basically evil and hard to change to a feeling that people are basically good and should be trusted. Now, this can make a huge difference in terms of motivating your audience to do what you want them to do. There are also differences in work-related values. These differences in work-related values show how to analyze a culture's attitude, for example, toward authority. One management researcher studied different managers and administrators in 40 countries to look at how they accepted unequal distribution of power, to see their attitudes toward individualism versus their attitude toward group orientation, and also to gain some understanding of their tolerance for ambiguity and their materialism versus their concern for others. This study refers to power distribution in a culture in terms of power distance, the extent to which power is autocratic. Cultures such as Sweden and Israel tend to be more democratic, which would imply that communication is more participatory. France, on the other hand, exemplifies a high power distance, which means that people tend to have less concern for participative management and greater concern for who has the power. In terms of the individual versus the group, the United States was one of the most individualistic of the 40 countries that were studied in this research experience. While Venezuela and Peru tended to be much more collectivistic in orientation. Now, certainly this has implications for communication style, which might work best. Which style would work best in the particular culture that you're going to communicate? Another framework that is useful to study in terms of management communication across cultures is what is referred to as Hall's analysis of high and low context cultures. Hall finds that cultures range from high context, which implies the need for prior relationships or prior content, to low context cultures that like to get right down to the business at hand. Several Asian countries, such as China, Japan, and Vietnam, were high context in their orientation in Hall's study. This means that they tend to establish social trust first, value personal relationships and goodwill, agree by general trust, and negotiate slowly and ritualistically. Low context cultures, on the other hand, such as Germany, Sweden, and most North Americans, tend to get down to business first. They value expertise and performance. They agree by specific legalistic contracts and negotiate as efficiently and effectively and detailed as possible. Now, this framework, whether you're in a high context culture or a low context culture, certainly has implications for anyone seeking to communicate. it has implications in terms of how you establish credibility, for example, in these different cultures, how you socialize with people in these different cultures, how you approach business situations in these different cultures, even such a thing as a simple negotiation. For example, if a stereotypical American were to begin negotiating a contract with a Chinese bureaucrat without trying to understand the high context nature of that individual, he or she might try to do business before socializing, for example, before sharing a meal, which could easily prevent the American from reaching the ultimate communication objective, to get the signature on the contract. Thus, cross-cultural communication in business relies on the sensitivity of the communicator in dealing with diverse cultures, the specific knowledge about that culture, and the ability of the communicator to use analytical frameworks such as those just described in dealing with a more complex and diverse environment. This brings us to the end of number 4.